From the Xfinity Studios at WVON.
We're your original social media.
You're listening to American Heroes, hosted by Cliff Kelly on WVON AM 1690.
Good afternoon. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON, America's Heroes Group Roundtable. We are globally connected with partner military families, Matters Care giver Keisha Jackson. April is Sexual Assault Awareness and National Deaf History Month. And, of course, today is Saturday, April 4th. I'm the host, Cliff Kelly. Executive producer is Glenda Smith. Our digital media producer is Manny Corazzari. And our assistant digital media producer is Titus Williams. And we are going to talk about something of interest right now. Keisha Jackson, a 22-year retired Air Force veteran and family caregiver, is on with us. Keisha, how are you? Keisha, are you there?
Hi. I couldn't hear you at first. Hi, Cliff.
Good. Thank you so much for being with us. Dave Coker, U.S. retired Army veteran and president of Fisher House Foundation. And that's what we're going to talk about today because this is so important, Fisher House Foundation. Dave, are you there?
I am. Thank you for this opportunity to join you, Cliff.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you with us. What you folks are doing with this whole idea is just great. We are so happy to have you because, you know, there's so many people. America's Heroes Group Roundtable, we're globally connected with and partner with military families that matters. And that's why we are so happy to do that. So who wants to start off to tell us about Fisher House Foundation?
Well, before Dave talks, I just want to mention, in addition to the other national days and weeks, April is also volunteer. There's a week in April that's considered National Volunteer Week. And so I thought the Fisher House would be a great opportunity to just talk about the Fisher House, what they've been doing, not just for COVID, although they will be speaking, I believe, about COVID-19, but what they've been doing for almost 30 years. So, Dave?
Yeah. Let me interrupt you, because I agree with what you're saying, but I don't want to leave you out. Keisha is a 22-year retired Air Force veteran. And after caring for her mother, who had stage 4 inoperable lung cancer, Keisha started learning about caregiver resources to share with other caregivers, which is just a great thing that, you know, what you've done, Keisha. And as far as Dave, Dave comes from a family with over 100 years of service in the U.S. Army. He joined Fisher House Foundation in 1994, after retiring from the Army, I'm sorry. That's the family, too, right, Dave?
Well, yeah. I'm the junior member of the family business. My father served for 35 years.
Yeah, now, let me finish. I made a mistake. I just want to let me finish. Cause you got a Fisher House is a home away from home for families of patients receiving medical care at major military and VA medical centers. And since 1990, Fisher House Foundation has served over, get this, 400,000 families, saving them over $500 million in lodging and transportation costs. That is just great, Dave. Now, Keisha, Dave, go to it. Whatever you think
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, at the heart of our program is the network of now 86 Fisher houses, and we're working hard to open number 87 later this month up in Ann Arbor. But if you think about what Ronald McDonald houses do, allowing families to be there when their children are going through a medical crisis, Fisher houses do the same thing, but we focus on supporting military and VA medical centers. The average length of stay is typically 9 days. The longest length of stay we've had approaches 4 years.
Wow.
And you know, it's just so important for the family to be a part of the process. To be with other families as well. These houses can accommodate anywhere from 8 to 21 families. And your focus is being there with your loved one. And then at the end of the day, you come back to the Fisher House and you're with others who are in similar circumstances. And you may see somebody who's a week or two further along in the treatment. And that gives you strength, it gives you stability, and it makes you stronger for the challenges that are going to come and that you're going to have to face the next day. But quite often in the military healthcare system, you know, you find yourself far from home when you are receiving the healthcare. You know, the last thing we ever want is for you to have to decide, well, rule number one, when you get that call and you learn that a loved one is wounded, ill, or injured, you want two things. Number one, you want the best medical care. And the military and VA healthcare systems do a great job. But you also want to be there. And that's a little bit more of a challenge. And that's where we can come in and make a difference.
How long has the house been Fisher House been in existence?
Well, the program started in 1990, and it's called Fisher House because there is a man by the name of Zach Fisher. He's a real estate developer from New York, and he wanted to do something that would bless all the services. He heard there was a need for something like a Ronald McDonald House, and he said, "I'm a builder. I can do that." And so for the first 20 houses, he wrote a personal check to build them. And that's why the program carries his name. When he passed away in 1999, the foundation became responsible for the construction and furnishing and expanding the program to new communities.
And how many are there now?
There's 86. And on any given night, we can support up to 1,200 families.
There are
86. We have one at the Hines VA Medical Center there in Chicago. And you know, initially when Mr. Fisher started this, it's a tremendous legacy. Our chairman today is his grandnephew Ken Fisher, who's in the real estate development business in New York, but it provides his leadership skills to guide us through the challenges we're not only facing today, but in the future. We have been blessed that initially the houses were there to support the military hospitals. And then we got a letter from a nurse and a VA, and it was the Stratton VA up in Albany. And she said, "Mr. Fisher, I applaud what you're doing for the military. But, you know, there's a tremendous need in the Department of Veterans Affairs for these kinds of facilities. Would you consider building one for us?" And he said, "Absolutely, I can do that." And we contacted the Department of Veterans Affairs, and we said, "Okay, so where do you think you could use a Fisher House?" And they came back and gave us a list of more than 70 places. And we went back and we said, "Okay, we're good. we're not that good. We're your top 10. And so when they gave us their top 10, that way we know we're investing in the right communities. And when we finish those 10, we ask for another list. And that's how we can help prioritize and make sure we're investing in the right communities.
So they're 86 now.
By the end of the year, I anticipate we'll have 91.
Wow, that is great. That is great. 91 by end of the year.
Well, Dave, that's 86 Fisher houses, but you also have the 30, you have, is it 37 VA medical centers?
Well, more than 40 of those houses are supporting VA medical centers.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And what we do is when we build these facilities, we give them as a gift. And the gift is given to the Secretary of the Army, Navy, Air Force, or Department of Veterans Affairs. In return for the gift of a Fisher House, the Secretary agrees they'll operate and maintain that house in perpetuity, which lets us go and bless the next community. Now, we will always continue to support the houses provide resources to them, but at the same time, it allows us to go and expand to the communities who have a recognized need, but don't quite have the resource yet.
Dave, give us a little background of your military service. I know you you retired from the Army when?
Well, I took an early retirement after 15 years back in 94. I was a healthcare administrator.
Okay.
And at that time, they were reducing the numbers in the military. And at the same time, they were managed care was just coming in, and there were a lot of opportunities in the healthcare industry, and it was a good time. And then I had made the decision to retire, but Fisher House is something personal to me. When I was a young captain over in Europe, my mother was diagnosed with lung cancer, and my father just happened to know the commander of Walter Reed, and my father called him up and said, Lou, my wife's been diagnosed with cancer. I'd like to get a second opinion. Who's got the best cancer program? And General Malone said, we do here at Walter Reed. I'll help make sure you get some appointments, but there's one condition. You're staying with me. And he opened up his quarters to my parents at a time when being in a loving, caring environment was special. And when I first heard about Fisher House, it just went off that, you know, this is giving people the same opportunity that my family benefited from. Except you don't have to know the general. In fact, it's probably better if you don't. I was stationed at Fitzsimmons, and we had received the gift of a Fisher House. And I learned that they were looking to start a national foundation. The program actually predates the foundation because this was something that Zach was going to do himself together with his wife, Elizabeth. When I learned of the opportunity, I couldn't wait to be a part of it.
You know, Keisha, when you finally have served more than 400,000 families, that is just a great thing. How did you get involved?
How did I get involved with the Fisher House?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, when I was stationed in San Antonio, I remember the Fisher House at Walter Reed. And then when I got stationed in D.C. in the area at the Pentagon, I had an appointment over in Bethesda at the medical center over there, and I got a chance to see the Fisher House. I didn't go over there, but I got a chance to see it. So I've known about it. I've had one of my coworkers and one of my friends who has had relatives that had stayed at the Fisher House while she was being cared for. So I heard really, really good things about the Fisher House, honestly, from the very beginning.
That's just a great thing. Our call-in number, 312-374-8255. 8130. I'm Cliff Kelly. This is America's Heroes Group. It's just great when people reach out and do that sort of thing, because there's so many people who need that kind of help. Right, Dave?
Well, it is. But, you know, when you think of the military, they need to be concerned about having the beans, the bullets, and the bandages. And this is something that, gosh, you know, Zach always said, you know, these people are my guests. And so when you walk through the door of a Fisher House, we want people to know that their service is appreciated, that it's honored, and that there are people who want to help them in their time of need. And the government just wouldn't do it the same way.
When you say it, that's interesting. When you say the government wouldn't do it the same way, tell us what you mean by that.
Well, when you walk in, these are upscale houses. Again, Zach said these are my guests. Mm-hmm. They'll be kept to my standards. So when you go into the kitchen, it is ground zero of that house, as it is in so many houses. Mm-hmm. And you have two sets of everything. You have a huge granite countertop and aisle in the middle. And on the right side, typically you'll have four sub-zeros. Three of them are refrigerators. One's a freezer. You know, it's those normal daily activities. When you get that call, you don't know what the future holds. You're concerned.
Sure.
And it's getting that cup of coffee and talking to somebody, finding out where they're from, how long they've been there, and sharing your story with them. That just makes it feel like home. It's in a Fisher House, you simply have an extended family and somebody who you can share the joys with, and you also share the burdens and the sad mm-hmm. times and the family's bond. You know, I've got to give credit to all of our managers, because the managers of these houses, you know, they are our hands, they are our hearts, and they've got to be mom, they've got to be the translator, because when you get a piece of paper and they say, okay, take the 2394 and go down to building 1232, and, you know, number one, you're in a place you're not familiar with. Mm-hmm. This isn't an installation that you're comfortable with. And just because the patient is military doesn't mean that their loved one is. Many times it's mom or dad who have no experience around the military. We have had birthdays. We have had anniversaries. We try to make every holiday special. And we've even had a couple of weddings at the Fisher House.
That's great. You know, when you bring that up, Dave, you're right. We just presume that everyone involved has some military background, and that certainly is not the case.
Well, it's and Keisha knows. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a special place, a special environment. Yeah. In the military, you make friends quick. Mm-hmm. And you know that they may be transferred out, so you bond just a little quicker, I think, than mm-hmm. most people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I wanted to note in this conversation, I think we said it earlier about in terms of the Fisher House, how they helped with over $500 million of out-of-pocket expenses for family members in terms of like with their hotels and flights for the families that are staying there, and that alone, because finances is such a big concern. When you're trying to care for a loved one and when you have to go somewhere and stay, whether it's out of state or even your family come to stay out of state, that's very helpful. I mean, they're helping with out-of-pocket expenses. They also have a grant to help for scholarships, I believe, as well.
Scholarships?
We actually have three scholarship programs, one for military spouses, one for the sons and daughters of those who serve, and then also our Heroes Legacy Scholarship Program, which is for those who lost a parent in service or their parent has become 100% disabled. And oftentimes that's a population that's forgotten. Last year, we gave out a little over 3 million in scholarships.
Boy, you folks are doing a great, great job. That's for sure. The anything else you need to let us know about before we close out?
Well, you know, with the COVID response, this is a tough time. Our country, and in fact, the world has never been challenged like this. And
right.
And there are an awful lot of heroes. You know, the people who work in grocery stores, the truck drivers, the mm-hmm. delivery people, mm-hmm. but our healthcare workers, the doctors, the nurses, the respiratory therapists,
wow.
are just doing an amazing job. And boy, we salute all of them. What we're finding with the COVID situation, you know, at both military and VA medical centers right now, they're greatly limiting the number of visitors. They've got to protect the patients. They've got
sure.
to protect the staff.
I just
and so. To adjust some of our programs. We're sending out gift cards to the houses because volunteers used to come in and fix a meal for the, mm-hmm, the families. Mm-hmm. Well, volunteers can't come in anymore.
Just out of
concern for the number of folks.
I want to thank you both. You're doing a fantastic job. Keisha Jackson, Dave Coker, thank you so much for joining us. Fisher House Foundation. Keep it up. All right.
Thank you, Cliff. Thank you, Dave. I look forward to having Dave back on again.
We'll look forward to it.
Thank you, Keisha. Thank you, Cliff.
All right. Take care now. We'll be back.
Hi, I'm Cliff Kelly, Vietnam veteran and host of America's Heroes Group, the game changer in radio, print, and digital media programming. We are a roundtable talk show where information, resources, and referrals are provided intentionally every Saturday to empower our military population on WVON 1690 AM, the iHeart Radio app from 4 to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. Please visit our website at www.americashg.org.
Hi, this is Cliff Kelly, the host of America's Heroes Group. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident or the result of malpractice, you have only one chance to get the compensation you deserve. You need a law firm you can trust with experience and resources who will fight on your behalf. With a proven track record of excellence both in and out of the courtroom, call Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman at 312-781-1977 for a free consultation or visit SeidmanLaw.net. That's Seidman, S-E-I-D-M-A-N, law.net.
Hi, we're the National Women Veterans United, the proud sponsors and partners of the Americans Hero Group.
Our mission is to ensure that women veterans are aware and have access to their VA benefits, resources, and entitlement. We monitor current or pending legislation that may impact VA eligibility and services. And we provide a safe place for women to come relax. We have a meditation room. They can get food, clothing, housewares, whatever emergency services they may need.
We're the only Women Veterans Center in the state of Illinois. We are members of the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, National Guard, and the Reserves.
Hey, Cliff, where can a veteran business owner go on the south side of Chicago for breakfast, lunch, and dinner meetings?
I'm a veteran, and that's an easy answer. Pearl's Place on 39th and Michigan. Pearl's Place has free parking available across the street. Reasonably priced, quality food that tastes delicious. Veteran owners, there's no place like Pearl's Place.
Hey, I'm Sister Soldier, proud partner of She Voices on America's Heroes Group. She serves, she matters, where your change becomes empowered. Also, watch me on the web at SheVetInspires.com or YouTube. Remember, I'm every woman because I am just like you.
afternoon. Good afternoon. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. I'm Cliff Kelly. This is, of course, America's Heroes Group. I am the host. Executive producer is Glenda Smith. Our digital media producer is Manny Corazzari. And our assistant digital media producer is Titus Williams. And, of course, we've been going for an hour and a half now. America's Heroes Group Roundtable partner is the University of Chicago Office of Civic Engagement, which is a great thing. We're so pleased that they are doing that. And we are going to be talking with Elisa Berman Cutler, who is Executive Director of Community Development. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you so much for being with us today. Also,
hang on a second. I'm having trouble hearing you. One moment.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Here you go.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. We also have Richard Mason with us, who is Assistant Vice President for Campus Life and Associate Dean of the college. How are you, Mr. Mason?
I'm doing well, Cliff, and how are you doing?
Good, good, good. I'm so happy to have you folks with us because we need you, you know. I think you know that, don't you? The discussion is going to be about the University of Chicago and the community support initiative for COVID-19. Tell us, who wants to start off in telling us about this partnering, which I just think is a great idea?
I can give it a start and talk about the program overall and then kick it over to Richard and talk about the meals in particular.
Okay, good.
So we are we're really delighted to be able to provide this kind of support as a neighbor to our larger community at this time. And so what we really are doing is this overall community development initiative of supporting our small businesses, our local nonprofit organizations, our tenants, employees, both of us and of these businesses, and then, of course, our residents directly through the food program. So with the small business work, we are looking to provide grant assistance to small businesses in the 9 neighborhoods around the universities and really asking those businesses to give a significant amount of that money directly to their employees, because we know so many folks have been laid off at this challenging time. With the nonprofit work, we're looking to support those organizations that we've worked with through our community programs accelerator and who are supporting people during this time. And then I'll let Richard talk more particularly about the meals program.
Okay.
Great. Thank you, Alyssa. Mm-hmm. So, yes, so the meals program is an exciting initiative that is allowing us to distribute to 19 sites in the communities that Alyssa just talked about. We're working with the Greater Chicago Food Depository, who's identified those sites and has worked with us and Alyssa's colleagues in the Office of Civic Engagement. And we're excited to be able to use all of the staff that work feeding students, staff, and faculty on campus, be able to offer them a job and be able to have them provide these meals. So it's a really exciting combination that's come together.
That's great. Students, staff, and faculty.
Well, in terms of the staff that feed them and provide them, we've been able to make sure that they have they get paid, and then they in turn are helping us with this meals initiative. So the staff that work through the various companies that provide food on campus are feeding our students, faculty, and staff. And so we're excited to be able to have them take a big part in helping us feed the needy in the communities that directly surround the university.
How did that come about, either of you?
Yeah, it's a great question, Cliff. I mean, I think it's part of, and Alyssa's talked a little bit about it, but the university has, through the Office of Civic Engagement, wants to engage with the surrounding community and find a way that we can continue to support those communities. And so it's with that in mind, when we knew this pandemic crisis had come upon, and we knew we wanted to support the employees that work for the companies that provide food on campus and support them. And also they have a great deal of expertise and a great passion for feeding people. And we knew that there was a need in the surrounding community. So it was really bringing together all of those different people around the university and coming up with this way that we could help serve the communities that are directly around us.
I think it's great because it is certainly needed, without a doubt, to both of you, and I commend you for doing it. How did it come about that you got involved to the degree that you have? I just think it's a great thing.
You know, I really think it was this idea that we have, especially over the last 10, 15 years, put an enormous emphasis on how can the university more directly support the communities that surround us. And so when we were looking at this time, we thought, what can we do that can further support these programs that we've all worked together on, both us as the university and our community partners, frankly, and how now that we've kind of together built this infrastructure, can we utilize it to support these community members who now find themselves in need in a way that they haven't before. So it really was, I think, a natural outgrowth of the work that we've been doing for a while now. And because we've been able to create those partnerships and lay that groundwork, it was relatively easy to spring into action in this very quick way now that we were facing this crisis.
You know, when I'm glad you're saying that, Alyssa, but you said this wasn't something you anticipated, was it?
No, certainly
no,
not.
No.
You know, it was more that we were thinking about, you know, overall, what does a community need? It needs good, strong local agencies. It needs strong local businesses. It needs jobs for people. And so because we had put emphasis on that, that infrastructure was able to be actionalized at this time.
But that isn't something that you would normally do as a university, in my opinion, anyway. Listen, don't get me wrong now. I'm very, very happy you're doing what you're doing. You know.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think in particular something that we've done in our work overall is really thinking more about partnership and how we can utilize the incredible resources of the university that go beyond money in the work that we do. So it is a lot about thinking about how do our resources as an employer, as someone who purchases things, as someone who is, of course, a provider of educational resources. So we do a ton of capacity building work. Mm-hmm. How do we especially leverage that? And so we are still doing all that at this time, but because of this incredible crisis, we realize that we also this time need to be a funder as well.
I think that's great. And let me make sure people understand, Alyssa and Richard, the neighborhoods, Douglas, Grand Boulevard, Greater Grand Crossing, Hyde Park, Kenwood, Oakland, South Shore, Washington Park, Woodlawn. That's all included, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
It's the 9 neighborhoods around the university.
9 neighborhoods, and that's 3,000 breakfasts, lunches, and dinners will be provided 7 days a week through. This is just how many meals is that?
So, Cliff, we think we're going to be able to do over 225,000 meals over the course of this next 2.5 months as we do this. So it's that's what we have committed to, and we'll be doing at least that. And if there's a way for us to do more than that, we certainly will with the help of other partners and philanthropy, because there are other people that have recognized the need and want to help. And so we're hoping to be able to leverage the infrastructure we've built to be able to do even more than that. And so that's something. This is certainly a fluid situation, and we continue to add sites and continue to work with different community partners through the Greater Chicago Food Depository to expand within those 9 neighborhoods the places where people can go get food.
That's what I was going to ask you, Richard. Is there going to be more sites added?
Yes, we're working with the Food Depository. They're very well connected. They have over 700 partners citywide, and so they're working. Their knowledge of those partners and the needs in those particular areas has been enormously helpful. They've been a great partner for us, and we want to continue to work with them. And also through Office of Civic Engagement with the Alderman, help identify other locations that could be added to this. So it's definitely, we will continue to add sites as we go on. We certainly just finished the first week of it, so there's a lot of opportunity for us to add additional sites.
I can tell you without a doubt how wonderful this is. I used to be an alderman once. We didn't have anything like this. This is the time.
Yeah.
This is just a great thing to be able to do this. Let me ask this to either of you. Somebody's going to call and say, I'm disabled or elderly, whichever. Can meals be delivered to me? Who wants to respond to that?
Yeah, so for individuals, we're not able to deliver to individuals at this time, but there are locations that work with individuals who have those sorts of needs. And so we're working with those organizations in trying to get food to those who need it. So that's what we're working, how we're doing it currently.
If anybody has a question, our call-in number is 312-374-8130. This is a great thing that the university is putting together. Are you all, the Greater Chicago Food Depository has the network that you talked about, but are you surprised, either of you, with the unbelievable problem that has come about, and as quickly as it has, and continues?
Melissa, do you want to take that one, or you would like to take, for me to take a shot at it?
Sure. Why don't you go ahead, Richard?
Okay. Yeah, I think it's been surprising. I mean, this is truly unprecedented, and so I think it's a new day in so many different ways that it's. Has come about, and so we continue to try to be nimble and try to adapt as something changes each day. And so pleased to have the infrastructure we have in place, the community partnerships and relationships, and the people that we have in place that are working in the university who are committed to that. So that allows us to be able to do things like this and all the other community initiatives that we're doing. Because we have that infrastructure in place and the relationships. So, but certainly I think we have to continue to be flexible and adaptable because it's new ground, and I think each day we're learning new things.
I think so, and I just think it's tremendous that you're being able to help as many people as you are, because Richard and Lisa, there are people who obviously are just, they don't know what the hell to do. You're helping a whole lot of folks doing what you're doing. I think it's great. I want to mention
that. No, we appreciate that. I did want to just give a direction to our website, too, just as people are looking for information about it. So one site that people should look at is coronavirusupdates.uchicago.com. Community support, and that'll give direction to the application for the small businesses, as well as a list of the meal sites for the meal delivery.
Give us that again, would you?
Alyssa? Sure.
Yeah.
Coronavirus update.
Spell that.
One word.
Spell that.
uchicago.edu/community-support.
I need you to spell that.
coronavirusupdates.uchicago.edu/community-support.
could there be a phone number?
You know, right now, because of the volume, I don't think there's specific phone number to call. Richard, is there one for food?
There really isn't. I think the phone number that I would give out is that our partners at the Greater Chicago Food Depository have a phone number, and if Cliff, I can give you that number.
Fine, Richard.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's 773-247-3663.
Great. 773-247-3663.
Yes.
That's great.
And so they also have the same information, and that can be helpful. In addition, their website as well. But that's, if you were looking for a phone number, that would be a good phone number.
That would be a good
one. People had questions about the food program in particular.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's great. I wonder, have you all been able to, at this point, it's early, obviously, but have you been doing this long enough to understand how good the program is going?
Yeah, you're right in saying that, you know, that it is early.
It's early, yeah.
We've done our first, you know, we've made, deliveries each day since Monday, so we've made deliveries today.
Mm-hmm.
We've been getting some really strong feedback from the sites that we've been delivering to, how appreciative people are, and that we continue to, as we work with new sites, work with them in terms of what their needs are. And obviously the needs are many, and trying to make sure that we get them food. Not all of these sites are open every day, and so we're adjusting with each day. We will be delivering to different sites, and then there are some that are open every day, and we deliver to those. And so it's been very positive. The morale of the staff that are making these meals is tremendous, and they are excited about being able to give back to the community. And we have a significant number of the staff that are making these meals that live in the communities that we're serving. So they know the need is great, and they know and they really feel great about the work that they're doing to help with that need. So
how did you? I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
How did you put that together so quickly?
Well, it's I think it's
you know what I'm saying. This is not a small thing you're doing here.
Yeah, it's quite an undertaking.
Right.
I'm fortunate that there's a great team at the university across the board that really has pitched in from the moment this idea became a reality. And then, you know, I can't talk highly enough about the individual staff that came in and really have made it. You know, they're away from their families, they're working, and they're putting these meals together and helping deliver them. And so their commitment to this project, along with all the infrastructure that we were able to put into place very quickly, has been a real part of how it's been successful. And a part of that is that, you know, that on a regular day, we're feeding a lot of students. And so we have...
Yeah.
Facilities and systems and just all the equipment that allows us to do these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
We're used to being able to feed the over 3,000 undergraduates that are living in our residence halls on a daily basis. So that level of food production and that level of organization is already there, and so. That's what's helped us, in addition to many of my colleagues around campus who have really pitched in to help us get this up and running so quickly. So it's been a real team effort. It's been great to see.
That's great. Well, Richard,
yeah, and I think to Richard's point about that capacity that we have, I think that's especially why we felt like this was a job for us. There are so many needs right now with what's going on in the world. And when we looked at what can the university do, what resources does it have, this unique capacity to feed 3,000 people a day was one of them. And so I think that was part of the reason why we especially said this is a thing that we can do. This is a thing that we can do quickly and really contribute to the community at this time, as so many other people are doing as well in the ways that they best can.
Yeah, you wouldn't think they could do that quickly. That's exactly mm-hmm. correct. That's great. Well, you think there will be more sites added to either of you?
I do. We've already within a week we've gone from having say 6 or 7 sites all the way up to 19, and that's happened just in a week. So I do expect that going on programs like your own and people hearing about this and continuing to work with our partners at the Food Depository will there'll be more partners that we'll be able to add, and more sites we'll be able to add. So I do expect that'll happen.
Well, I just think it's great that because that's what is needed for a whole lot of people, and particularly you're talking about the student body. That's extremely important. And there are so many people in those neighborhoods that you mentioned where there are folks who are going to need some help, and you know that. And you're addressing it. You know, like we're talking about someone who's elderly or disabled or, you know, can get a meal delivered. That is so meaningful, Lisa and Richard, you know? It really is. What else do we need to know in our last few minutes?
Melissa, do you want to talk a little bit more?
I can talk a little bit more about the program for small businesses, because that application is due on Monday, and we have received a lot of applications, but are certainly welcoming more from businesses in those 9 community areas, and particularly those with a physical presence. We really want to use this money to support not just the individual businesses and their employees, but the neighborhoods and commercial corridors as well. And this is really a part of our U Chicago Local initiative that we've had for about the last 8 years now, which is our effort to buy local, live local, and hire local through the university. So continuing that support at this time where we might not be purchasing from a new business, but we can support them in this other way.
And when do the new businesses, when do they have to apply for that? Lisa.
They'll need to submit an application by this coming Monday evening.
Okay, by Monday. And how do they do that?
They do that through that website that I mentioned.
Oh, okay.
If they Google also, they'll be able to find it. If they just Google University of Chicago COVID response, that might be even easier. It's a fairly simple application. We're really looking for them to show some impact from the COVID response, as well as how it's impacted their employees and how they've contributed to their community overall. And then we'll be really trying to turn around those grants very, very quickly within the next few weeks, because we're really thinking of this as a bridge to larger government funding, which we know will be coming. But this is designed to really help people in this immediate time before any of those larger funds get released.
Okay, and that was the number you gave me before, 773-247-3663. Wonderful. I want to thank you both, Lisa Berman Cutler and Richard Mason. You've given us some great information. Thank you so much for being with us. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you, Cliff.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
All righty. And we are going now to our executive producer, Glenda Smith.
To our digital media producer, Manny Corizani, we miss and love you so much, and we thank God for healing you. Manny is recovering from the coronavirus, and he'll be back with us when it's time. But Manny, you are in our prayers, always. Regarding any information about affordable housing, social services, wellness care, please feel free to call America's Heroes Group at 312-803-2618. We're located at 155 North Walker Drive, Suite 4250. We thank you for watching us live on Facebook. Make sure you hit the Facebook like button at the top of our Facebook page. Therefore, you stay connected and will receive notification regarding future shows, events, information, resources regarding our veterans, armed forces, family members, and the surrounding communities. As always, we're extremely grateful to our partner, Mrs. Dorothy Lavelle, of the Chicago Crusaders on Veterans, Armed Forces, and their family members. It can be viewed online at www.chicagocrusaders.com. to subscribe to the Chicago Crusaders weekly column with the one and only, the governor of talk radio, Mr. Cliff Kelly, and America's Heroes Group, please call Chicago Crusaders. 773-752-2500. Send an email to ads. It's ads at chicagocrusaders.com and request a subscription. To Mr. Titus Williams, who's sitting in and have now become our assistant digital media producer. Oh, you are the best. Yes, you are. Thank you so much. Always helping me get organized for this show every Saturday. And the one and only, the lady herself, Mrs. Tiara Randall, for keeping it all balanced. And I know I drive you crazy in the control room. Love you both. To our global listening audience, be blessed. Be blessed. Be safe. Have a wonderful weekend from America's Heroes Group.